You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
June the 8th, 2020. Hope you had a good weekend. You might have seen a lot more folks out this weekend and going into this week as folks gradually decide, you know what, the coronavirus thing, I'm not that concerned anymore. I want to get back to work. I want to enjoy my life again. We're going to get into that in more detail over the next 2 hours as to where we stand and some talking about, do we have a vaccine? Will we have a vaccine? Must we wait for a vaccine to declare all clear? New York City, in the process of trying to start to reopen today. We're a long ways from re-triggering our economy and getting it back on track, but we're making progress ever so slowly. Some states faster than others, and in some states, yes, we have seen an increase in coronavirus cases. We have to continue monitoring it, but what we've been going through with the economy lately has been absolutely devastating. And many health experts say all this shutdown and fear of moving around and folks not seeing their doctors for regular routine and processing everything from prostate cancer to checking for breast cancer to heart problems is going to be more dangerous than the virus will be. We'll see. Unfortunately, it's one of those things that we'll have to see over a period of time. And, of course, the other big issue, should we defund police, reorganize police, reform police, abolish police, as some are calling? And the start obviously begins at Minneapolis. The trigger last week of George Floyd being killed, obviously, and how he was killed. And everything that's happened since then. We've had a lot of peaceful protests throughout the nation over the weekend. Peaceful. I cannot stress that enough. Peaceful. That's the way it should be. Rioting, anarchy, chaos, vandalism, looting, arson. No. That does not fit our First Amendment. And there is no excuse for such action. There's no explaining it. There's no acceptance. There's no, well, I understand. I can don't condone it, but I understand. You can't do that. You enable them to go ahead full bore. And keep in mind, a lot of those out there and what they're doing when it comes to looting, breaking into stores, setting fires, it does nothing to honor the death of George Floyd. And we're already seeing within police ranks many police saying, you know, that's it. I'm going to take early retirement. I'm not going to be out there on that front line anymore and not be appreciated. It's too damn dangerous. Black and white cops making that decision. And who wants to be a police officer nowadays? The White House is considering a Trump speech to the nation on race and unity. That's acceptable and probably would be a good idea, but I want to caution you in the beginning, anything he says will not be acceptable to those who are trying to destroy the Trump administration. Has President Trump handled every bit of this precisely the way I think he should have? No, he has not. He's made mistakes or things that he said he should have said. All of that aside, going forward, what happens in this speech? Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson says, I think you're going to be hearing from the president this week on this topic in some detail, but I would ask you to reserve judgment until after that time. And Dr. Carson, I appreciate the caution, but I would tell you many of them are not going to do it. And police reform and reconsidering what police do and how they do it, better training, everything, that should be a priority. I'm all for that. And every law officer I know is in favor of making sure that officers are properly trained, And then, of course, that they follow the training. And officers inside the department must be willing to step across the blue line if officers are in violation or doing things wrong. That is a very hard line to cross. I understand that. But you don't do your force, you don't do your department, you do not do your occupation any good if you fail to do so. We'll be getting into that. And again, another question, what is violence? What is crime? I mean, some folks are willing to say, well, that's not really a crime. Don't worry about it. Well, we start excusing crime and making acceptance and saying, well, that will be okay. We're on a bad, bad path. We got a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
COVID-19 is a new health concern, but Wellington Environmental has 30 years experience to make your company and environment safe. Wellington Environmental can give you peace of mind, and the cost is very reasonable. These days, you can't take a chance that customers, employees, your family would be exposed to COVID-19. You have to be proactive. That starts by calling Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. You'll quickly see why customers have relied on Wellington Environmental for decades. COVID-19 can survive for hours on your furniture, your computers, your equipment, and every time someone touches that surface, they could be exposed. You don't want that liability. Call Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Traveling in a freighter combi, on a heavy trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Here is your red meat. A nation without police, what would we have? Back to the days of the wild, wild west, no sheriff in town, you know what happened. New sheriff comes into town and tries to start law and order. And if having enough support from the others in the community, then maybe it works. If not, well, we're right back to lawlessness. I think even on the far left, I might be giving them too much credit. I think on the far left, at least among some of them, they understand that a nation without police would be chaos and not good. But then again, it's something else you need to keep in mind. Those who really want to abolish police will eventually say, we've got to have more law and order, and then they will use the federal government. The very thing that was talked about the other day, only this time it will be a heavy hand of government all across the nation from the capital down, although it will look more like China, like North Korea, which some on the left will be willing to accept because they want to move us from where we are in this nation closer to socialism, and then the next step is a dictator. All the same ones that are crying out that Trump is acting like a dictator by even considering the Insurrection Act. And, of course, the op-ed by Senator Tom Cotton the other day in the New York Times, you saw the blowout on that. We're going to get into that in more detail the next hour as to how the media is being perceived and how the New York Times says it should be perceived. And they're flat out admitting that, you know, maybe we should not let someone just have a chance to speak their mind. Maybe we should always investigate, and yet they don't on others, only when members of the conservative side speak out. But as I said, we'll get in that more hour in the next hour. A nation without police. I mentioned a moment ago, already officers across the nation are reevaluating. Why should I be on the front line and put up with this? And then if I'm doing my job properly, I'm going to be condemned. And, of course, if I step over the line, there will be no second chance. And when you're an officer and you're facing a situation, there are times there's a lot of second guessing. And sometimes better training would have avoided some of the situation. Sometimes more police instead of one or two at the time might help. But then there are other cases, like Minneapolis with George Floyd. Four officers involved in arresting one man, and it ended up with his death. There have been stories going around, pardon me, and we acknowledged in one of the autopsies that he had had various chemicals in his body. I wasn't clear at the time of his drugs, alcohol, or what. Now, supposedly it's fentanyl. I'm not making a case for this. I want you to hear me out on this. I'm not making a case that he was high on fentanyl, and it takes sometimes four or five people to control someone if they're jacked up on that. The video I saw did not show any reach of violence on his part at any time, And yet there was one clip that showed four officers on him at one time back behind that car as they were handcuffing him. And then there's just the one officer with his knee into the back of his neck when he was saying, "I can't breathe." At that time, I will repeat again, when a suspect is contained, restrained, you must cease and begin to relax. There is no sense continuing aggressive action when he's under control. But what did happen the other day, it shows that either lack of police training and or, I will accept, some systematic racism within some departments, particularly maybe the Minneapolis Police Department or this officer in particular. And again, this was an officer who had 18 different complaints against him, two of them leading to letters of reprimand, and he's still on the street. And apparently still on the street because the police union keeping him on the street. So yeah, there needs to be a reconsideration. We cannot accept, I will not accept, that every police officer does everything right. I will never give blanket endorsement to anyone. Not even my children. I would expect them to give me a blanket endorsement. Just because we're blood, I'm their father, does not mean I won't make a mistake. Believe me, I've made my share of them. But again, at this point, it's a mass effort to destroy policing as we know it, not by what we saw the other day with George Floyd. That was not proper policing by any stretch of the imagination. But now we're told by former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick that more than 300 New York City Police Department officers were injured in the riots over the last couple of weeks, nearly 600 considering leaving their posts. Those officers were injured during riots where we had arsonists and looters ravaging neighborhoods, police trying to stop them, or as you recall the other day, just patrolling the area and suddenly attacked. Mayor de Blasio is talking about defunding the department and doing more. Yet the New York governor, Andrew Cuomo, another Democrat, says, "I'm not in favor of defunding right now and just simply accepting that everything they're doing is wrong." So they're not even on the same page. And they're not on the same page when it gets to Minneapolis. A veto-proof majority of the Democrat-dominated Minneapolis City Council announcing yesterday it was going to accept the protesters' demands to abolish the police, promising a police-free future. Now, what would that mean, a police-free future? Well, the city council admits we don't know. We said in the statement, we recognize we don't have all the answers about what a police-free future looks like, but our community does. In other words, you're going to let the community decide police actions. Goes on to say, we're committed to engaging with every willing community member in the city of Minneapolis over the next year to identify what safety looks like for you. If crime is running rampant, where do you think most of the crime is going to take place, and more often it does now anyway, and who's going to be most at risk? Unfortunately, it would be the minority community. They're already stressed in their neighborhoods, gang wars, gang shootouts, drugs left and right, putting young, innocent children and families at risk. And you just start saying, well, we won't send police in there. Is that going to make things safer? Now, I told you the Democrat-dominated Minneapolis City Council is all in favor of abolishing police, a police-free future. Mayor Jacob Frey appeared at one of the protests over the weekend. And he was giving his opinion. And in his opinion, he could not simply say, I'm willing to accept that we get rid of police. And he got shouted down and basically told to get the F out of here. But the mayor was still trying occasionally to say, I understand, I do, but either he doesn't or they're not willing to accept his feeble understanding in their opinion. Here's the way it was captured on some video.
I've been coming to grips with my own brokenness in this situation, my own failures, my own shortcomings, and I know there needs to be deep-seated structural reform in terms of how the department operates. The systemic, racist system needs to be revamped. The police union needs to be put in its place.
Jacob Frey, we have a yes or no question for you. Yes or no, will you commit to defunding Minneapolis Police Department? What did I say? We don't want no more police. Is that clear? We don't want people with guns toting around in our community, shooting us down. You have an answer? It is a yes or a no. It is a yes or a no. Will you defund the Minneapolis Police Department? All right, be quiet, y'all. Be quiet, because it's important that we actually hear this. It's important that we hear this, because if y'all don't know, he's up for re-election next year. If y'all don't know, he's up for re-election next year. And if he says no, guess what the fuck we gonna do next year?
And he certainly got the message. If you say no, which he did, come election next year, we will get you out of here. That's the kind of action that already has other members of the city council saying, we agree. We need no police. I'll remind you, a member of the Minneapolis City Council is a son of Keith Ellison, the Minnesota Attorney General. And the city council member Ellison said the other day, I support Antifa. Antifa, which is in many cases responsible for the violence that occurs at protests, encouraging looting, attacks, arson, anything that causes more mayhem and chaos. Now, again, the Minnesota Attorney General, Keith Ellison, said, we do have a problem with our police in the sense that every time there's an issue, police send people with guns. That is, of course, what part of their duty is. But I want you to hear his explanation, then you help me decide, well, what else would you do? Here we go.
What I hear people saying is that, yes, we want public safety. We want security. We want people to investigate sexual assault cases. We want people to be protected from domestic violence. Those things are not going to miraculously stop. But what we also want is a reconception of how we achieve public safety. I mean, right now, basically, we have a paramilitary model where the department calls each other military style titles, captain, lieutenant, all that kind of stuff. We send out people with guns and they are there to use deadly force no matter what the problem may be. If the problem is sexual assault, we send somebody with a gun. If the problem is domestic violence, we send somebody with a gun. If the problem is somebody in a mental health crisis, we send somebody with a gun. And I think that what we need to do as a society, as a city, is to say, is there a better way to have people be safe and secure, to investigate crime, and to hold people accountable?
It would be easy to simply dismiss everything he said, but I don't want to do that, because inside his comments are some legitimate issues. One issue is obviously off track. saying we send police to use deadly force. That is not true. They're not sent to use deadly force in every case. No officer worth wearing the badge wants to be involved in a situation where they have to use deadly force against someone. And there are numerous occasions where officers were able to de-escalate something without reaching that level. There are failures, and there are times that maybe they've done the best they can, and then when things begin, either the officer gets out of control or the officer is actually doing the proper procedure protecting himself and others. So you want a police force that you call, but they don't have guns. And when they arrive, if it goes wacko, what do you do then? What do you do then? Maybe we should just send fire trucks to every location and hit everybody with water instead of the possibility of bullets. Would you want to be among those trying to be a public servant going to the scene of a domestic violence situation, and you're going to be able to just talk them down and go in without any protection or weapons if you need them? I'm going to get into that in more detail. We're going to tell you what the Chicago Mayor Lightfoot has to say about policing and so forth. Because inside what you just heard from Keith Ellison, the Minnesota Attorney General, is a key concern that needs to be addressed. Are there better ways sometimes? And do we have a way to provide resources for people short of having to use police? But sending police without guns into situations like that? Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
You want to look better, stronger, leaner? Visit my trainer, Jamie, and his team at Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. Check it out, redfitnesslounge.com, redfitnesslounge.com.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up
this is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So Keith Ellison, the Minnesota Attorney General, was saying a moment ago that every time we have an incident, we have a domestic violence case, we have a mental case, we have some kind of disturbance, we send police with guns. Would you want to be a police officer and be sent to some of these situations without a gun? But I remind you, his other statement, police are going in to use deadly force. That is not true. They may end up having to. Hopefully they don't. But many officers are killed in domestic violence issues. Both the husband and wife turn on the officer. But what about mental cases and others like that? I mean, you never know what you're going to encounter until you get there, obviously. Mayor Lightfoot of Chicago, they're talking about also reviewing their police department and reviewing what everybody in the nation right now is. What can we do? What can we do to improve? And I'm all for those reviews. And take every piece you can to see what can be improved and what's been good policing and what's been obviously bad policing, and for bad police officers to be kicked off the force. But right now we're at a point where we just want to throw everybody out and throw the entire department out. You'll hear from the left all the time, look, the rioting and the arson and the looting, that was a small percentage of the actual protesters. I will grant that. But why cannot use that same argument reference police who get out of control or do not do their job properly versus the vast numbers that do an excellent job? And again, Chicago Mayor Lightfoot and her view on policing and what we're doing now and what maybe could be done.
The reality is we can't rely upon the police to provide public safety. That's a 1990s version of public policy. We know that people need public safety, but they also need jobs. They need opportunity. They need a pipeline to the legitimate economy. And that's what we have to bring as cities. It's not an either or proposition. It's a both If we rely upon law enforcement only, we're going to fail. And that's what's happened in way too many places across the country. Last year, we stood up and brought an all-hands-on-deck approach to public safety, where we've got our schools involved, our parks, our libraries, our social services organizations. That's how we build healthy, vibrant, and safe communities, not just relying upon the police. And we're going to continue to push forward on that front in Chicago.
I'm going to endorse pretty much what she said. I do agree that we need other processes in play to avoid getting to the level where we have to involve police. And if those are being done properly, if there's funding and so forth available for that kind of effort, that might eliminate often a need for police. And we know we've got communities that need help on an economic level. Trump has been doing a very good job with that. They won't acknowledge it, but he had, up to the coronavirus, whipping everything down. But still, he found the lowest unemployment in history during the first 3 years that he's been in office prior to this. And then you got the other issue about what is a law and what isn't a law. And I also want to talk a little bit more about what the Mayor Lightfoot of Chicago said about other resources. It doesn't have to be an either-or. I will agree with that. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure you have some alarms to let you know if someone breaks into your home. But what happens if your home is invaded by creatures? Six legs, eight legs, maybe more. Rottler Pest Solutions can help keep those pests out of your house. And if they're already inside, get them out. In fact, you can get a free, no-obligation inspection and estimate to protect your home. You can get that at any time. Go online to Rottler.com. Rottler.com, schedule your free inspection today. Rottler is the largest family-owned pest control business in Missouri. 10 locations, more than 200 team members. Plus, Rottler has a money-back guarantee. If you're not happy for any reason, they will make it right or your money back. You know, I first called Rottler more than 40 years ago, so I know they will take good care of you. I continue to trust Rottler. Rottler Pest Solutions, Rottler.com, Rottler.com.
Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a ever-loving light on me. Yonder come is roses.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Make no mistake about it, in this country over recent years, decades now, we have not done the job we probably need to do when it comes to mental health in our streets. A lot of the homeless on the streets, be they in L.A., New York, or in your own community, probably have health issues. They may or may not be veterans. It doesn't make any difference if they have a mental health issue. And resources have been cut severely. And there are other issues. But when you start talking about the idea is to defund police and take money from policing and put it into some of those things, that's not a wise decision because police are already strained to the point of breaking anyway. And that means more pressure on the officers on the street. The very best officers suddenly under more increased pressure. And when you reach that point, things can go wrong in a hurry. That's no excuse. It's simply a fact. Joe Biden, by the way, has been trying to play both sides of this issue of defunding police. I'll give you more details on that a little bit. And again, look at what's happening with the laws we have already. I raised the question earlier. What would happen if we did not have police on the street? What if you follow the view of Keith Ellison, the Minnesota Attorney General, that every time there's an incident, we send police with guns. And we told the police, don't carry your guns. Just go in and then we'll find out if you need them. Maybe at your risk of your life or the risk of lives of others who are on the scene. Officers do need training on dealing with cases of mental health, and even to the extent of various ailments that will strike people that may make them appear to be drugged or on something. You can't just automatically assume when maybe they're having a medical condition. And it's easy enough in hindsight to go back over a case and say, well, he was having that epileptic fit. He was not having anything, and that's probably the improper PC to use nowadays, but basically some with a medical condition that the officers misconstrued, thinking they were on drugs when in fact they weren't. But if you've never carried a pistol and a badge and trying to enforce law, you may encounter situations you don't know what to make of it. That's where better training comes in. And also, if there are other resources that can be brought to bear before something like that happens with some of the people on the street. But I'll give you an example of one thing that would happen. If you take police off the streets, you defund them. Say you have a pawn shop. That's your business. An alarm goes off and obviously, it's being broken into and folks are running through the store stealing. And you have to go defend it yourself. Or you maybe have a friend. Maybe a friend who is a prior police captain who's retired now but says, look, I'll go on over there. I have police duties behind me and I'll go over there and check it out for you. And a retired police captain, let's say in his 70s, goes over to check on that pawn shop and suddenly gets him self-caught in the midst of the looters, one of them armed with a gun, and the retired police officer also has his, but he is shot dead. I'm talking about specifically the case involving 77-year-old retired police captain David Dorn of St. Louis, who did exactly that. No police were around. He went to investigate a break-in at the pawn shop and found himself not with just looters, but guys with guns, and a shooting broke out. The surveillance footage shows him arriving at the pawn shop. It's already been looted by others. And then as he's in the pawn shop, one of them opens fire and shoots him, leading to his death. So that means civilians would have to arm themselves and go to their own place of business and protect the business. And in cases, some cases they have, because police are strained and can't be there. That's what you would have. And in some cases, even a man prior training in police was unable to handle the situation in front of him. And then we have an old whole issue of what is a crime and what's not a crime. The Manhattan District Attorney caught a suspect, more than one, involved for vandalizing St. Patrick's Cathedral on May 30th. Again, that was some of the fallout from the George Floyd death. Now, vandalizing St. Patrick's Cathedral. What did St. Patrick's Cathedral have to do with what happened in Minneapolis? Not a thing. But they've got the F word spray painted all over it, BLM all over it, and so forth. And they caught the folks doing it, one in particular, charging him with third degree and making the graffiti on the charge a criminal mischief on the church. And now they say, well, we're not going to prosecute. We're not going to prosecute that kind of vandalism. I went past an area the other day, an overpass, and inside the cover of the overpass, someone had put, kill all police. It's not just graffiti, it's the message that goes with it. But if you decide, okay, you can spray paint a church, a synagogue, a place of worship, regardless of your religion, a mosque, and we're not going to consider that a crime. Is that what they're looking at doing? What about looting? Three protesters tied into Antifa were caught and charged with looting a Target store in Austin, Texas area. They were arrested, charged with burglary, looting, property damage, and now the prosecutor is saying, well, we probably won't end up carrying through the charges. So I guess that's going to be acceptable. Los Angeles, They had hundreds of peaceful protesters arrested and detained, and they were peaceful. What were they doing? They were breaking a curfew. They didn't think their First Amendment rights should end at 9 o'clock. Your First Amendment rights don't really end except that by police order, we've got to clear the street so we don't have any more violence in the nighttime hours. You can come back tomorrow during daylight and continue a peaceful protest. So you don't like the curfew, and you want to insist it violates your First Amendment rights. And now the ACLU and Black Lives Matter suing Los Angeles for arresting hundreds of peaceful protesters for breaking a curfew. So if police put in an order of a curfew, that's not going to be something that has to be followed? No, we can do what we want. You go in and arrest us, even though we're being peaceful, we have violated a curfew. You broke a ruling. You broke a statement of a law. I will have to admit, I have a heavy foot. I do. I admit it. And I've paid the price a few times. If I'm speeding above the speed limit, I'm breaking the law. I may not like that speed limit. I think it's too slow or whatever for what I'm doing at that time, but I'm breaking the law. So am I supposed to say when I get stopped for speeding, well, I don't really accept that law. I think I'm entitled to go as fast as I want as long as I don't hit somebody. Well, that's kind of stupid rationale, isn't it? So the curfew falls to the same thing. We don't like the curfew. We're going to continue to violate it. And now you arrest us, so we're going to turn around and sue because you arrested us for breaking your curfew. And in the midst of all this, we have folks that are being turned loose that are above and beyond simply breaking a curfew. This whole issue with immigration and illegals, we know that has happened over and over again. We got another case right out of the sanctuary city in New York City, because New York City, New York State has their no-bail law, just going to let folks go. There's a 26-year-old illegal from El Salvador, wanted for murder. New York City police had repeatedly let the guy go. They weren't going to hold him for immigration. They weren't going to enforce the immigration law. So it finally took an effort to track him down and finally arrest him by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And you know what his complaint is, as well as many others? Well, I'm an illegal. I was here, and you're just trying to pick on me. The guy suspected a murder, so we should just say, well, he's an illegal, so we should kind of let that go. We've already seen how the bail system is working in New York City and New York State. 7,500 illegal aliens, criminal illegal aliens, released back into their communities just last year. That included convicted killers, child sex abusers, assailants, arson cases, because they've decided you don't need to post a bail, so we're going to let you go free again. I began this hour asking, what would happen if you had no law and order? If you had no police? If you're going to say, as Keith Ellison, Minnesota Attorney General, suggested, every time we send police, they bring guns. That's part of their duty, to enforce the law and bring peace and security to a community or whatever the situation might be. Do we need more efforts on social service programs that might help alleviate some of this? Yes. Do we need better training for officers in many cases? Probably yes. Do we have officers who should not be on the force? Yes. But those who are out there doing the best they can at risk to themselves, they're having to reconsider. Now congressional Democrats are moving forward with an overhaul. Let me break that down for you in our closing minutes of this hour.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Earlier today, House and Senate Democrats holding a moment of silence at the U.S. Capitol's Emancipation Hall, reading the names of George Floyd and others killed recently by police. Then they knelt for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, the length of time that Floyd was pinned under a white officer's knee before he died. I know some are going to mock their action of taking a knee and doing that in silence. I encourage you not to. They were properly honoring the death of George Floyd and others. Just because the other side is doing something, you can't always mock it and make fun of it. What I am concerned about is what they're doing legislatively. They are pushing forward a package that they say will be bolder than any law enforcement changes of the past decade. In fact, one statement from one of those being involved in this event earlier today was saying, "This is a time for police culture in many departments to change." I'll accept that's a possibility. And then adding, "We believe legislation will be a major step forward in that direction." That part remains to be seen. They're apparently going to look at several aspects of law enforcement accountability and practices. And again, I'm in favor of always doing that. And you know what's brought this about? We keep this in mind. It was brought up the other day, and we discussed it, and my guest the other day, John LaBoutier, pointed out as well. If there had not been cell video of what happened to George Floyd, we would not have had all this documented. We would not have had the reaction and everything took place. So, yes, all the cell phones out there and video being captured. Officers, if you're not doing your job properly, you better believe you will be documented. And police cameras that the officers are wearing and carrying, in many cases, will help verify that they did the right job, but it can also be used to prove they didn't, especially when officers are dismantling or not activating those units or turning them off. That's another question every time it happens. You can't simply say, "Well, I forgot," or "didn't." You can't do that. This draft document also would revise federal criminal police conduct statutes to make it easier to prosecute officers involved in misconduct, quote, knowingly or with reckless disregard. I have to worry in the sense that, again, this is going to be a net that's going to sweep everybody up, even those that have been doing a good job. Do you ever make a mistake on your job? I mean, a small mistake that's not a big deal, but it suddenly gets accentuated by something that happens down the line with your work. Maybe you submit some wrong figures and the budget's blown, whatever. You may or may not be fired for it. And, of course, it's not a life or death matter, but when you're facing the situations police do in the street sometimes, you're not allowed to make a mistake at all. Better training helps avoid that. I'll be the first to stand in line that we can always have better training. We can always reform some situations. We can always do better investigation when incidents go wrong and learn from them. And police officers, the good ones, don't have a problem with scrutiny. Because when officers are doing bad, it reflects on the rest of them. It only takes a few of those so-called bad apples to make all the officers get blamed for it. And that's where we are right now. And that's the fear I have. And you know what black officers say? I read a quote from one earlier, and I don't have it here in front of me. He said, "We can't go into the minority neighborhoods as black officers because they distrust us as well because we're wearing a badge." And I grew up in the neighborhood where I'm being sent to police. And I joined so I could go into that community and help get rid of the thugs and the gangsters and make the community be peaceful. But I'm not just not getting respect. I'm getting fear. I'm getting slurs. I'm getting name-calling where even children are afraid to see a police officer, be it black, white, whatever color. One thing in the midst of all of this, Joe Biden's campaign was asked yesterday, "What do you think about the demands for defunding the police? We'd like to hear from Joe Biden." And you know the response was? He did not want to talk about it. Steve Scalise, congressman of Louisiana, said Biden needs to take a definitive position on defunding police. He's hiding, trying to play both ends. He said if Biden believes in defunding police, he needs to be vocal and say it. If he doesn't, he needs to say that. If he's trying to find some middle ground, say it. He can't just be silent. And I want to remind you again, in the midst of all of these incidents, we've had numerous officers suffer injuries. Not because of peaceful protest, but gunfire. We still have an officer in Las Vegas shot in the head, still on critical situation. Other officers hit by bricks and rocks. Those are not peaceful protests. Next hour, the op-ed that Senator Cotton put in the New York Times, and they published it, continues to have repercussions, and now a staff writer for the New York Times tries to make a clear understanding of what we believe would be free press and also what's biased press. Next hour.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.